Thank you, bye-bye, thank you.
All the way from Zimbabwe, let's have another big hand for Blackham Falasi. You've been listening to Blackham Falasi live on CFRU 93.3 FM from the University Center Courtyard. We'll be here back here next Tuesday with a presentation of The Harpoonist and the Axe Murder. If you'd like to catch Blackham Falasi, they're back in London on Thursday, Toronto on Friday. Big hello to Noam T. It's Sick at Home. Hope you're feeling better, Darwin. Thanks very much.
That was a concert by the Blackham Falasi Five, initially broadcast live to air on November 11th, 2014.
This is K-Train Fitzsimmons playing the heavily distorted chromatic harmonica. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
Spur Guelph is a new three-day festival of politics, arts, and ideas. From November 12th to 14th, be engaged and inspired by a series of keynotes, panel discussions, and readings featuring Jaron Lanier, Tim Lilburn, Lee Maracle, Tony Mestrovich, Nadia Mustapic, Wanda Nanabush, Philip Kevin Paul, Lee Smolin, Adrian Stimson, and music by Peter Hatch Digging Roots, DJ Cyclist, and the Penderecki String Quartet. Tickets are available at riverrun.ca. For more information, visit spurfestival.ca. Spur Guelph is a presentation of Music Guineas, the Aramasa Institute, the University of Guelph, and the Literary Review of Canada.
Canadian musical dynamos Splash and Boots have become a favorite of pint-size entertainment connoisseurs, playing the CNE, Treehouse TV, and stages in every corner of the globe. And now they are going to be in your very own backyard at the River Run Center, 35 Woolwich Street, a physically accessible venue, on Sunday, November 8th at 2 p.m. as part of the Guelph Mercury Family Series. Tickets are on sale now at the River Run box office. Call 519-763-3000 or visit riverrun.ca.
Hello, welcome to the Mobile Community Radio Show. I am your host, Jenny, and this is CFRU 93.3 FM. That short track you just heard was taken from my Golden Community Music Project, which was a recording studio that happened in front of City Hall to collect random people playing music together. Today is the first episode from the Brant Avenue Neighborhood Group Space. The guests on today's show were long-term resident Dorota, who is an active participant in the neighborhood group, and Emily, who is a placement student doing her master's in community health. And so it was really exciting to hang out with them, and I'm going to go straight into our conversation. Here are me, Dorota, and Emily.
So why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Hi, my name is Emily. I am a student with Wilfrid Laurier University, and I'm hanging out with the Brant Avenue Neighborhood Group a couple days a week until mid-December. So I've started early September, and yeah, I'm really excited to get to know everyone here. And yeah.
Awesome.
And I'm Dorota. I am a community member and a leadership team member. I had been helping out with the community garden. I have two teenage daughters who are both quite involved in the community as well. They were both counselors at the summer camp, so we are fairly integrated, I guess I could say.
So awesome. It's exciting to have met somebody so integrated right out of the gates.
Thanks.
I was explaining to my guests that the mobile studio project is all about collecting voices from the community that might not otherwise make it onto the airwaves. And so, that really takes a lot of trust. If you want to grab new demographics and new people who haven't been on the radio, you can only assume there's something that has kept them from the radio up until now. So in some cases, it's just geography. Maybe they even just haven't heard of the radio station. But in other cases, it's shyness or thinking they don't have anything to say or to talk about. And so
I think in most cases, it would be shyness or stage fright or whatever you'd call it.
It's fun to come and have it all pre-recorded while at the same time this studio really creates the aesthetic of radio.
Mm-hmm.
I find when you have a microphone and you're looking at your guests, you know, and I'm your guest in this space. I'm new to Brant Avenue. And so, you know, I can turn the tables and you could be interviewing me. And you would probably have more, you know, neighborhood appropriate questions to ask. But what drew you to this neighborhood group?
Well, I came to the, I'm a student with the Guelph Community Health Center, so I'm doing my Master of Social Work placement there, and one of the kind of outreach days that I can do is come to Brant Neighborhood, which the health promoter, which I'm a health promotion intern, works very closely with the Brant Avenue Neighborhood Group, so more by chance than anything else, but it's been a really good experience to be able to come so far and see a little peek at like a really, really awesome community group that's doing so many things in the neighborhood. It's amazing. I was able to go to Harvest Fest, which happened, I think, a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
where so many children were coming and getting lots of fresh produce and getting interested in different music that was happening and face painting and just seeing the community come together. It's something that really interests me, and it's great to see here. So far.
That's awesome.
And it's great to have you, Emily. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, do you know Dorota?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know how long the neighborhood group has existed here?
I think it's been over 20 years, actually.
Wow.
And I hope you get to talk to two of the original ladies who are here. Getting it going, setting it up over 20 years ago.
Wow.
That's Janice and Debbie. They're both still sitting on the leadership team.
Wow.
So there's lots of history here.
How long have you been involved?
I think it's been about 5 or 6 years, somewhere around there.
Do you live here before that, or did you move here around
then? No, we moved from Brampton, actually. My daughters and I, we moved from Brampton. I wanted to go to U of G, and I did go just for 1 year, for 2 semesters. I might go back still, but Brampton was getting a little bit, I don't want to say dangerous, but I was getting concerned for the, both of my daughters were just coming into the teen years, and I thought maybe a quieter community or, you know, less bustling would be a good idea for them, and it turned out to be the case. So as soon as we moved to Guelph, we started with the neighborhood group.
Wow, so you moved to Brant right away when you got here?
Yes.
Cool. And have you spent time in other neighborhoods? Like, do you have a feeling for what makes this unique compared to other parts of the city?
Yes, I actually have. I had the opportunity to work as a neighborhood support worker, the kind of position that Lynn has in our neighborhood, for two other neighborhood groups, for Grange and for the Downtown Neighborhood Association. And, of course, Brant is closest to my heart because, you know, we've been here. But both of the other neighborhood groups were very unique in the way that their community members were contributing. Some leadership teams were very extremely strong. Some other leadership teams were quite vocal about certain issues that really mattered to them. So, I mean, Brant is extremely cool, but, you know, other neighborhood groups too. have amazing things going on and amazing people volunteering and working there.
Well, what would be some of your favorite, do you think? Or, well, I know. I can ask you first, Emily. Having only been here a little while, so you haven't been in this neighborhood before being placed here, correct?
That's right,
you live
yeah.
in a different part of the city, presumably, or maybe even another city?
Yeah, I lived in Guelph while I went to university for the past, or when I was doing my undergraduate degree, and for a few years after that as well. And I lived, I think, I'm not sure if I was in Onward Willow neighborhood or close to it.
Okay.
But that's kind of my understanding of Guelph was that area. And so Brandt is very new to me. I live in Kitchener now, but I worked somewhere where we often drove through this neighborhood to get from Aramosa to Woodlawn. And I find it really interesting to be able to come back and actually meet people here mm-hmm. and get to see what the neighborhood is all about instead of just going to parks that were in the neighborhood and driving on through. So it's really cool.
That's cool. And there's a little toddler walking over here. This is amazing. So I'll ask you first, because I feel like if Dorota spent a significant amount of time engaged here, then I'm excited to hear your perspectives. But I'll ask you first, Emily, if having spent even just the small amount of time you have, are there some things that jump out as very notable or unique qualities or some aspects or types of people or programming that happens here that you're the most excited about or the most intrigued by?
Yeah, I would say that there's so much community happening here and so many people. I think what I noticed first is just how many people come regularly to the Friendship Place and how many people volunteer as well as come to programs. So it's such a mix of you know, giving back and also being involved in other ways. So that's something that really jumped out at me. And I find that everyone is just so welcoming here to say, you know, hello. And for me, someone who doesn't live in the neighborhood, to be able to come in and get to know everyone, I found that really quickly people were really receptive to that. So it's such a welcoming space, I find. And just seeing people, they have a snack program here where a lot of volunteers will help to make the snacks and then also help to hand them out to people and might also be involved in and in taking home some of those snacks. So it's very full circle, which I find is really, really cool.
That's awesome.
That's interesting to hear that perspective from Emily, because I probably wouldn't have noticed it, first thing. So thank you for offering that.
You're welcome.
I think it's neat, too, because I imagine that some neighborhoods in Guelph could have a stronger divide between who has the time or resources to provide programming or services versus the people that most need them. And it's neat to imagine a more of a circular effect here, that people might both need and give the same sorts of things. But yeah, maybe their snacks would be limited, but then it's broader. If 10 people bring 10 different types of things, you get to eat a variety instead of being limited to what, you know, resources you have.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
and great. We actually encourage our community members to volunteer for those who do receive services from us. We encourage them to come in their own capacity, whatever it is. There's one neighborhood community member who plays an instrument and comes to some of our events to give back. And, you know, obviously we need help with the pantry, with stocking and giving out and shopping and all the other things. But yes, we encourage our community members to give at least 2 hours of their time a month to, you know, to be able to use some of the services.
That's awesome. And so do they get to, do people tend to play into their strengths? Like if they know that there's a particular gift they have, if they're particularly social or maybe they took a particular course that they know more about physical health than food or, you know?
That's exactly what we encourage, that they don't feel limited with what is needed, but they come with their strengths and what they have to offer, and then we kind of look around and see if we can, you know, bring it in some way.
And so do you guys do, like, a little bit of, you know, matchmaking, where when you meet people, you might see a talent that they have or a resource that they might not even recognize. Do you find that happens here too? People come and think they don't have anything to give, but then you guys can find things in them, or just by talking to them?
Yeah, I guess by talking and networking. I think maybe Lynn will be able to talk more about that, because she is really the... Lynn and Katie are both the ones that, and Emily now, that interact with our community members more so. But yes, we usually have something happening, and then and people search within themselves to see, like, for example, the new computer lab. We had one amazing donor that put in for computers, so we're now looking within ourselves to see if we have the skills to show our community members the basics of getting online and setting up an email account and all that. So, but we're finding that maybe training the trainer is probably a good idea too. Sorry if I'm not directly answering your question.
No, I know. This is exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. Well, I think it's neat when I think it's a natural instinct to think you don't have something unique to give. Like if especially if you come out to receive. I think that if you enter a place with the intention of benefiting from a program, I mean, like a lot of the times it's positive, but for some people it might also, depending on the program, they might be in a sort of vulnerable state depending on what they're receiving. And so I could see people coming in and thinking of themselves as needing and not necessarily feeling confident enough or self-reflective enough to know what they could give. And so it's a nice idea, like this sort of more circular environment for people to get to find that strength.
Or it's very empowering, one would think, right? In order to be the opportunity to be on the other end.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like you'd be a better volunteer coordinator if you've been a volunteer for a while, right? Because you have the perspective and you know what's involved.
Absolutely. And for a project like this one, the mobile studio, I met people in the other location sometimes that they didn't feel comfortable talking on air, or they thought they didn't have anything to say, and yet some of them were such key figures in their community that their ties to other people, their ideas for who to suggest that might participate, and even just them explaining it on my behalf, because like I try to be as small of a barrier as possible, that I try to be really approachable and make it very clear that it's all about the people coming to use the space, and that I'm not bringing an overarching model for this to follow. But I'm still a stranger, and people really underestimate how amazing they can be just by providing context, like that they can tell their neighbor and their neighbor knows them. So if their neighbor says this is something you might like to do, it's going to have a completely different response of comfort and security coming from the word of a friend than from me as a newcomer to this community for this space. And so
it could be, but don't underestimate yourself, because you are the catalyst for this, and this is so accessible that I think, you know, your personality does have impact, and
well,
it's important.
It's the snowball effect we're talking about. If I can be...
Do you want to come say something?
Say hi!
You were talking about the snowball effect.
So like I wouldn't be here if CFRU didn't exist, the campus radio station. So even though its main presence is up on campus, it is a community radio station, and it's aired all over Guelph, and it's online. It airs really anywhere that has an internet connection. So CFRU is in and of itself a reason why this sub-project exists, and then I'm a reason why there can be somebody sitting here at the studio when it goes to the neighborhoods. But those neighborhoods are the reason that the mobile studio is allowed to be there, and then the people that are there are the reason that we're doing it in the first place. So it's like every one of us is a necessary cog in the wheel, but the more people we pick up in the process, that's sort of what I mean by that snowball. It's just it starts as one little seed,
right,
and then it just grows with the more and more participants. So even a participant that doesn't want to be on the radio, as literal as that, can still be a necessary piece in the collecting of the voices from around here.
Right.
And so like, that's the part that I'm excited with connecting with. If this went really successfully, it could be here for 2 or 3 months without my voice ever even being included. If it was, you know, if it could perpetuate itself and have, I would still be here. But I just mean that two people talking to each other from this neighborhood is probably even more powerful in a lot of cases, because they will have an entirely different conversation than one that I lead. If that makes sense.
Yes.
And it's fun having both of you, because I feel like we have a very engaged, you know, resident who's been here for a bunch of years in DeRoda, and then we have a new excited to be engaged. So you both have the enthusiasm, but an entirely different perspective going into it.
True.
What are you most excited about, Emily?
I'm most excited about meeting everyone in the community and hearing their stories. I think a part of this project that I find really interesting is the idea of kind of collecting people's stories of what they want to say and getting them out there. So I find that really interesting. I like hearing about the history of how it all started, how people have got together, what keeps it rolling. So that community development piece, just seeing it in action instead of just, you know, when you're in school, you read a lot about it. But it's so much more important to see it and see it from the people that are actually involved in that community. So yeah, that's probably the thing I'm most excited about here.
That makes sense. Is this your first placement through this program then?
This is my second placement.
Second placement. And so where were you before?
I was at Canadian Mental Health Association of Huron-Perth, so even a completely different city counties. Yeah.
So what comes out of this, like, other than just like a degree or potentially a career, from just a personal standpoint, like, what drew you to pursuing this? Like, do you have a personal goal in all of this that you think you can come to?
Well, I've always enjoyed working with people. I think that's the stock social worker response, is that working with people is something that they enjoy. And I found that coming into my Master of Social Work is kind of an opportunity to do a lot of different things instead of more narrow focused, and to narrow it as I learn what I like. So within school so far, and even within my own life, I've noticed how much I enjoy community work and community health work in particular, and I didn't realize I knew that until I started the program and looked back at how much I had been doing that that was in that area and interested me. So from this all, I'm just really excited to learn about how to be involved in different communities, my own included, but also act as someone that could be a resource person and allow the people in the community to kind of get their message across of what they need and how they can do it on their own, because that's really what a community should do, is get together itself and really make that happen. So yeah, it's really cool to be able to see it and learn how to be involved.
That's awesome. Yeah, so you can teach people this, well, not encourage the skills out of them. Like, teach is probably even too strong a word a lot of the time. A lot of people have it in them, but yeah, if you can get them working together, it can sustain itself indefinitely under the, and it, I think that's the other neat thing about when these groups form around things like neighborhoods or geography, is that the voices, there's probably a certain tendency, a certain type of demographic that plays out based on, you know, could be the cost of housing, it could be how close by schools are or how close by certain types of jobs are. But I also like the idea that the voices are constantly changing too, just because people move in and out. And so, yeah, it's nice, the idea of things focused around areas that have that flow factor, that there's always one person maybe familiar with the resources here, while there's a new person coming in and changing what the resources need to be, and that there's a constant flow.
Right. There's a change within the community too, in the community members themselves, with the neighbors, because new subdivisions go up, and maybe, you know, new employer moves into to the area, which we probably desperately need. But the skills always, there's an influx, and then people move out, as you said. But we've been really fortunate because some of the donors used to be our neighbors before, and some people who have moved on and gone elsewhere are still remembering us and still helping out and giving back.
That's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So where do they go? Is there, have you noticed a trend in the time that you've been here of if there's like a newcomer, like a, I guess I'm trying to think of, does this neighborhood group create a particular type of quality that people go on to use in other areas of the city? Like, is there...
Perhaps there is, now that you mention it. There's definitely that confidence that we have voices, not just here, but we talk to the council, we talk to the mayor, you know. There's got to be something like that happening. I only know of those two persons, and they are both very successful. Yeah, perhaps.
That's cool.
Something worth exploring, maybe with other members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like I like the idea that I kind of think of this as like a tapestry, this radio program, if I do it right, that I get a good cross-section, and some of the pieces cross over, and some of them are totally independent, and mm-hmm. some of them might even have conflicting ideas or opinions as to what these spaces are, but
in 3 months you definitely will get a very wholesome picture of this community.
I hope so. If it's done right, I will. And I like the idea of them getting to listen to other people from the community. I described, well, when I first got here today and I was trying to explain this, one of my favorite feedback comments that I've gotten about this project was my friend who was listening and said that it was like getting to listen to a conversation she didn't have to participate in. And so she was super shy, and she listened to probably every episode that I aired, and mm-hmm. I was in her neighborhood group, and I could never convince her to participate, mm-hmm. but she listened, and she enjoyed getting to hear people have these at times very casual conversations, mm-hmm. because it was all, you know, it was all talking about the area around her, and whether it's an area you live in or just an area you're intrigued by, mm-hmm. it's a nice opportunity to get to listen, because as soon as you're having a conversation, you're already changing it by being the other voice. But if you get to just listen sometimes and you're not even there, you hear two other people having a perspective that's untouched by you, which is kind of exciting too.
Very much so.
I don't know about you, but it's hard for me not to talk. So listening
I
is
have trouble really sometimes.
To you. time is never right, and the years go rushing by, and you'd give up your left eye to get back to that night. We were cocooned from truth, coddled, capped up. We were fresh as the morning dew. We couldn't even move.
Welcome back to the Mobile Community Radio Show. I am your host, Jenny. This is CFRU 93.3 FM here in Guelph. And that track you just heard is called Time is Right. It's by local artist Tyler Wagler, and it was sent to me as per my request for home recordings and demos and B-sides. And as always, I extend that to you and your friends. If you know anybody, or if you yourself have any recordings that haven't really made it onto the radio before, please send them to me, mobile@cfru.ca, with the subject recorded submissions, and that makes up the audio content for these mobile radio shows. So today's guests are Dorota and Emily, and I'm going to go back into our conversation that we had hanging out at the Brant Avenue neighborhood space.
What drew you to participating once you got here? Like, what was your biggest drive to this?
Well, first I wanted to make some friends, get to know people. And then I think for both my daughters and I, the idea is that the better our community is and our neighbors are, the better our lives are. So I guess at the risk of sounding, what's the word I'm looking for, selfish? But we feel that, you know, if we have something to offer, then all together, collectively, it makes our neighborhood more fun to live in, and safer, and more caring.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Do your daughters participate too?
Yes, they do. One has gone away to college now, but the younger one is still here, and she's still involved in special events and in other ways. So hopefully she'll be participating in the leadership youth program with Drew.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. sounds really powerful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely have a few people already in mind from just being on the Brant Avenue mailing list. It's amazing, the mailing list is so full of information and events. Like, at first I was a little overwhelmed. Like, I hope I can keep up with the emails, but just the sheer content of how much is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so specific to this neighborhood. Like, there are resources that are citywide, but I find it really fascinating as a person who doesn't live here to just see how many different ways you guys are staying on top of pairing people up with things they need, and even just listing something you have that somebody might want. Like,
mm-hmm.
apparently sometimes there's an email that'll just say, so as a stroller to give away.
Right.
And that kind of thing. But,
or someone's looking for childcare or things like that. Yeah, that was actually something that came out when we had a community forum. It was called the World Cafe, I think. And those were some of the wishes that community members brought to the table, saying that they would like to be able to exchange things with each other, whether it's skills or tangible things or services. So that's probably a little step in that direction.
It seems effective. I mean, it's been working to engage me so far. Like I said, I've been limited so far to the programs because everyone's a new person, and so I can't yet walk into this room and know right out of the gates who's going to be the most social, the most likely to be involved. And mm-hmm. so I'm at the mercy of lucking out and having a couple of friendly people show up specifically for radio.
You're welcome. But soon enough, you'll know the regular faces, just like Emily.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, because I have two guests. I would love to hear both of you guys ask the other person like questions, because like, you know, this is a nice opportunity for both of you to get to know each other and the different reasons that you're engaged with this space. So I don't know if one of you wants to start or if I'm putting you too much on the spot, but
I just have to think of a question, I guess.
I could start because I thought of something just now. When you go back to your masters, is this experience going to translate into something? Are you going to be able to gather the experiences that you've had here into some sort of a document or some sort of a suggestion or just your opinion?
There's certainly a lot that I can do with being here. There's not anything specific that I'm asked to do by the school itself, mm-hmm. but I find that, you know, again, it's what the community might want. You know, if you
really
want something, tell me what it is, and I can help act as that resource person.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think maybe if we could pass it on to the leadership team, and mm-hmm. and you could give us some ideas of what it might be, something that would benefit the community,
yeah.
I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the interesting thing is it's a short 4 months of being here,
mm-hmm.
so that makes it difficult because it's such a short time to get to know what people might want. So the more people that can tell me what I could maybe do to support, or what the more things that I get involved in and I ask around, would this be helpful to you?
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, would be something. I don't want to just come in and say, I'd love to run a program about this, because that's not something that you necessarily need, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or want, or would have any use from. So if someone's saying, you know, I've been working lately with Peggy about and getting people together from the community garden, which I didn't have a chance to be very involved in because I've only come in September,
mm-hmm.
but to maybe support, you know, gathering the feedback from that and what people's ideas are for the future and going from there, and just being able to compile that together in a way where maybe people aren't comfortable telling each other how it went if there's something more private, but maybe I can synthesize into, you know, a more anonymous feedback that can go forward and
definitely.
And maybe
I think that's
that
a great idea. Actually, that's a great idea because of your background, because of what you know academically,
mm-hmm.
and because of the fact that you bring a fresher perspective to everyone who is just, you know, living here and business as usual. And then that added piece where people could be comfortable just talking to you. I think all those things would just come together and. Yeah, definitely.
We'll
thank
see.
You.
Yeah,
thank you
welcome.
For thinking of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now for me in a question, I have to think of something that might be supported or that Jenny hasn't already asked, because I feel like we've got to know each other such a great amount here now.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe one of my questions is, what is there a certain activity or program that you feel like you're most connected to here?
I think traditionally I've done the special events.
Okay.
So the Christmas party, the Harvest Fest, the Summer Carnival, those are my things, I guess. Right now I'm really passionate about healthier eating and nutrition.
Yeah.
I think because the livestock agriculture is kind of wreaking havoc a bit on the environment, I'm kind of trying to get people excited about plant-based stuff. So I'm going to be more involved in the community kitchen. I think I'm going to be around during the Garden Fresh Box, maybe making smoothies and getting folks to try maybe some smoothie and then tell them that there was a piece of kale in there and see how they react. But, you know, I think I'm going to lend myself in that direction. And then in the bigger scheme of things with the GNSC, who is uniting all the neighborhood groups in Guelph, we're doing equity training. So that's really amazing too. Mm-hmm. We're going to have speakers coming and sharing their perspectives and airing some films. That's another really exciting part that I'm involved in.
Thank you for that. That's amazing.
I'm already so excited. I can just picture myself showing up at all of these different events and trying to grab the person who's angry about the kale.
Yes, and interview them after.
Mm-hmm. I liked Dorota's suggestion of you somehow documenting your time. I feel like that's a really useful piece for me that... it's one thing to be engaged and participate in events, but often just by being there, you forget to take that extra time on the other end to reflect on it and make note. And the times that I've had to respond, like say I got asked to do a program for the city and they have a component where I have to write up how it went, right? Like some sort of...
Right.
I tend to do a lot of events where there isn't necessarily a required feedback reflection piece at the end of them. It's just about the event. But when there is, I find that as I sit down to type it, I often start grumbling, like, I was already there, was already successful. Why do you need me to articulate that or give that a rating of how great it was out of 10? But when I sit down and have to put it into those models, whatever you call it, It's so healthy for me to rethink it through with a bit of perspective. And especially if you're going to go forward and do the event again, mm-hmm. it's amazing to sit down and really think about how many people showed up or what their feedback was. And mm-hmm. it's amazing sometimes when you have an event and you wanted there to be, say, like 100 people, and it felt like there weren't that many. And then you sit down and started making note of who was there and how they participated, and there were maybe more people than you think, or that
exactly
you thought numbers would be important, but in fact it was like the quality of participation, right?
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
It does seem like I'm happy. For me, it's the editing of this. If it was all live to air, I might not re-listen the way that I do when I'm editing, or have to collect it and then broadcast it later. And so it's really nice for me to get to sit and listen to the content after and to frame it. And it's amazing how even just putting a song at the beginning and mm-hmm. then going into conversation and then like breaking at the right moments, how powerfully it frames it and makes it sound like it has so much more context than the people think at the time.
I think I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that it's fun for me to do it in an audio world like that. I feel like I'm a social person more than a on paper written person. If I had to design a program in print, that would be one of my bigger struggles, you know. Mm-hmm. But if I can just show up and convince people in person.
Spontaneous, yes, yes. Going back to your point about counting people, we knew how many people came to the Harvest Fest, but how much corn was eaten.
Oh, yeah, that's true. A lot of corn.
A lot of corn, and it told a bigger story, because I wouldn't have thought there were 250 people there, but there must have been.
Yeah, and I'd love to share a little story from that too, of just having different kids come up, and we had some extra food from the Garden Fresh boxes that mm-hmm. was left over, and it was quite a bit of food, and thinking about what can we do with this food. And so one of the community members had it in the back of her truck, and then we just started kind of compiling it together and handing it to kids as they were coming by. And one of the most exciting things for me was having kids run up to the truck and say, do you have any more carrots? Can I eat it right now? Oh my gosh, I love plums. They're so good. And thinking, wow, when I was that age, you know, all I could think about was cookies. So it's amazing to be able to kind of make that spark. And, you know, there were kids coming back and saying, can I get a bag for my friend? And then engaging them too to pick from the garden, and just having so many young people involved in and eating fresh food and wanting fresh food and taking it home to their families was just really cool to see at that Harvest Fest. Wow. I think that was my favorite part. Yeah.
It's so cool to hear that. That means we are making a difference.
Yeah.
Because that ties into food justice and, you know, having those skills later on in life and promoting that with their own children. And like you said, I remember being excited about lettuce coming out of the ground when my grandma showed me how, but then my children kind of, you know, just by the virtue of our lifestyles, we're not necessarily that connected to growing and cultivating. But yeah, past principal of Brand, she shared with us how therapeutic even being in the garden for some children was. So even pretty challenging children transformed when they were involved, because we used to run a garden program that was specifically just for children. So community gardens are on many levels are totally amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. It makes me feel like I wish I brought my kids to more community garden things, because I'm really lucky. My children have, you know, since they were allowed to eat real food, have always gravitated to vegetables and fruits above all else. And
you are lucky.
I remember at Thanksgiving dinner or something like that, where my son was kind of like overwhelmed, and he threw a tantrum during dinner and had to go in another room for a bit. And when he came back, you know, everyone else was done eating, and so he ate, you know, a bit more of what he was supposed to eat. But then I put the rest of it aside, and I was like, I don't want to hold up the entire dessert for my son. So I had a discussion with him, and I said that he could go to dessert with everybody else, but he still had to eat this, you know, token amount of carrots that were left or whatever. And I remember like multiple family members looking at me and saying like, he's not going to eat his vegetables if he has the cake first. And I was like, I know my son, if we have agreed on this, he's gonna listen. And he also just loves them. And he not only ate the cake, but he just sat with this bowl of carrots. He ate probably 10 times the amount I had set out as the amount, all after cake. And I remember some of those same family members just staring at me like it was the most ridiculous thing. But
wonderful.
Yeah, my boy will just like grab spinach from the bag. We buy sprouts at the market, and he'll eat half the bag on the way back to the car, and it's magical. And so
my daughter used to eat green onions at No Frills when she was, I don't know, maybe just over a year, and same thing, shocked looks, and she was like, what? What is this? But yeah, straight from the ground is the best, right?
Well, and that, I really look forward to, since my kids do already have an appreciation for vegetables, it seems like a natural transition to how they come from and be part of us too. I think that the community garden, I just learned about the community gardens, really. I had one of the coordinator for the community gardens over at the Two Rivers space came and was a guest. And before that, I had not heard really about them at all. I knew they existed, but I thought they were like, you know, people planting some flowers or maybe some little tiny demonstrations to your child of, I put a seed in the ground and it grew. But I had no idea that they were as organized and like fruitful as they are. And now that I know about that resource, it seems like a magical thing to participate in, because I think you just, as a mom, if you have other things on the go, you picture planting seedlings with your child, but then you're like, am I really going to have what it takes to nourish these properly and have them? And you don't want your kid to be disappointed because you didn't hold up your end of the bargain.
And, and that's the beauty of having a community garden, because it's not always on you. There'll be others that will come and do some weeding, and later on in the season, it's pretty much the vegetables themselves that grow, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the work has to be put in the spring, but then you just come and reap, pretty much.
Well, and it is nice, the idea of that being social. That was an interesting point that came up, that if you have a neighborhood where people do have space to have their own gardens, why, like in the case of the Lions Park Community Garden, people pay to have plots there. And there was the question, why do people pay to have a plot in a public space when they could do it in their yard? And a big part of it was just exactly the community piece, that just the idea of you weeding while everyone else is weeding is inherently more pleasant and more motivating. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be the worst person with the most overgrown plot. And so there's like the happy motivations, but also the guilty ones when you see that your plot's a little scrappier than the rest of them. And
needs more TLC.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. And getting together. I think hanging out together was a big part too. We're still working on that, as Emily knows. Working on getting more community members to come out and participate in greater numbers. But, you know, there's something about growing food together. There's that spirit of doing something positive together, something that builds the community together. Because those things that are ready to harvest, like Emily said, the children are so incredibly excited to bring them home. So potentially those families will try something different. If it's an eggplant, maybe they, you know, wouldn't purchase it from the grocery store, but if their child brings it and is so incredibly excited, perhaps they will look up the recipe and see if they could try it, you know? So that leads to that. And just on the environmental point too, the more gardens we have and the less just grass, I think that helps with water circulation too. And the fact that there's food always available that you don't need money for. So if you need something, you could just run over there and pick it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really important, and getting together, hopefully we can pass this on to more of our community members. But gardening together is therapeutic and so much fun. I don't know, we exchange, we build community and we exchange resources, and hopefully
there's
someone helping us here at the board at the controls.
It's interesting how much something, when you think about it in advance and it's not something you've tried doing yet, it can seem intimidating, like a new job. You know, you could go to school and aspire for a particular job and then still have majorly cold feet the first day it starts. Like, you always think you're not going to know how to do it if you haven't done it yet. And so that, for me personally, like, every time I get out of my element and do something that scares me, that in and of itself feels healthy. It doesn't even really matter the outcome. It's like I play into my strengths so often with so many things I do that anytime I can see an opportunity to test the waters, especially if, like, I mean, you got to think of the worst case scenarios with these community events. Like, you might be scared to participate or think you don't know how to do it, but, like, you're not going to get fired. You're not going to be out anything.
You can hardly go wrong, too.
Yeah.
See, with the community garden, it's not, we tried this before, that everyone had their own plot, right? So you could definitely tell which plot needs more weeding or if someone knows what they're doing. But if everyone works on the whole garden, then there's so many people, then, you know, maybe someone already grew a couple of carrots the year before. So they would be there supporting you if you feel like maybe you need to come out of your element, as you said. And because you work on every patch, no one can really say, oh my gosh, why didn't you weed that part there? Because everyone's responsible for everywhere.
And therefore,
everyone can harvest everything.
Yeah, see, I had no idea. Like,
so much room for safe learning kind of thing. Because a lot of people, I do find that a lot of people second guess themselves on the ability. And really, there are no bad outcomes. I mean, you know, as long as we give the plants water and they, you know, were put in the ground properly, I think there's always success at the end. So, you know, I would definitely encourage you to try it if you're thinking of it. And all the other listeners in communities who are thinking about getting involved in community gardens. It's really much easier than it sounds.
Yeah, and I find, too, like, I've tried to learn a bit more about gardening on my own, you know. There's so much access to the internet and books about it, but I find that I have no idea what I'm doing, even with those guides. But once someone tells me or shares with me their like whether or not I can eat this certain plant or what I would do or maybe how I might cook it in a recipe, that sticks with me for a lot longer. So I've noticed that too when I went over the weekend to support closing down the garden for the season and just having people tell me about a flower I'd never heard of before
that
I
edible.
Could eat.
Yes,
yeah.
I heard of
and
that
then
too.
Then I took down a recipe of how to make it into a little kind of patty. I don't remember what this is all called, but I remember how to do that. And so tonight I'm going to go home and make these patties and try them.
That's
and
so cool.
Otherwise, I might have just picked these flowers and just looked at them, but now I know I can eat them. And yeah, there's no way that I would have ever been able to learn that without coming together with other people.
That's so cool. Yeah. Books I find are really scientific. I mean, they're talking to someone who already knows what this is all about. But being actually shown, like Mike, who was our coordinator for the garden, you know, this is how you spread the root. And the sweet peppers, they need to struggle, so you don't give them any compost and all these different things and making little indentations around the stem so the water can gather there and not flow away somewhere else. I mean, all these tricks of the trade and that he's so willing to share. And then everyone has access to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah, that's... I have to say, I mean, I've only spent this first afternoon here talking to you guys, but already even just the description of your garden sounds like that more circular give and receive than... I think, like... I'll be interesting to see if that continues to be a theme with different people I come to meet here, because it is different than the model of the community garden where everyone has separate plots. Like it's
right. And that's how we started.
And it's so neat because it might be like that. It's especially successful because of, like you said, you know, getting to safe learning or not having as much of like a target on your back. But it also speaks to people's willingness to share and, you know, not need to have the pride factor of a specific plant that they were solely responsible for. And
absolutely.
So it's really nice that that's already reflected, that you guys are that willing to reap the rewards evenly and not say I deserve more, I did more work. Like, that shows a lot of nice reception and
hopefully a good spirit.
I hope
brand
so.
Spirit.
Well, I think that we should wrap up our particular segment. Thank you to Dorota and Emily for being
my guests.
You have been listening to the Mobile Community Radio Show. Today's location was the Brant Avenue Neighborhood Group space, and the guests were Dorota and Emily. And we're at that space, 35 Algonquin Road, every Thursday from 1 till 3 p.m. We have radio drop-in hours, so come down and make radio with me and see what we're all about. To take us out today, I am going to play a song called Cold Black River Stream. It was taken from the Folk Songs of Canada Now music project. It was a project by Henry Sveck that went around Canada collecting different interpretations of old folk songs. So this is an interpretation that was done by Steph Yates. It's a beautiful song. Tune in again next week for more Mobile Radio. Here's Steph Yates, The Cold Black River Stream.
Come you shanty man, a driver's come listen one and all. Your sympathy I do invoke, your attention I will call. To the sad fate of the young man who from Peterborough came, who lost his life on the call. Dry on the Black River Stream. The 11th day of April to his home he bid farewell, in company with his brother, and the truth to you I'll tell. His fond and loving mother begged of him home to remain and warned him of the danger on the Black River Stream. He left his camp one morning. was the fate that did await him. And alas, he little knew, in jumping from a log he fell. The truth I will explain, as he could not swim to the bottom, sank on the cold black river stream. Sight there gazed at me when his body was found. His comrades gently bore him out and placed him on the ground. The lifeless form so still and cold, one deathly smile did beam till the silent lips was ever closed by the black river stream. No more his laugh or songs are heard like the ones we used to hear on the merry stream.